Hello and welcome. This is Alexis Neely, and we are here today to help you live your life and run your business with your eyes wide open. You are listening to today's audio program because you've made the very smart decision to either invest in the Lyft Foundation system or you are a VIP member of a personal family lawyer or a creative business lawyer. What that tells me is that you are committed to living with your eyes wide open. You are not willing to live your life with the worry, doubt, and fear that comes with hiding in the shadows. And you know that true, empowered, and inspired action comes from truth and awareness in your own life. The purpose of this monthly Eyes Wide Open audio program is to help you keep your eyes open. And the way that we do that each month is that I interview someone I consider to be a role model in our community, someone you may have heard of before and even might think you know pretty well. But instead of talking about the things you've heard again and again, we're going behind the scenes. We're talking about things that may have been in the shadows and that may have arisen when this person wasn't able to see what was right there, something that happens to all of us. It's by having these conversations and talking about these things that we don't normally talk about that you will feel empowered and inspired to begin bringing your own shadows into the light and seeing what's right there in front of you, even when it's hard to look at. So today I would like to introduce you to Eyes Wide Open entrepreneur Amy Applebaum. Amy, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, Alexa, thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, I'm so excited to have you here because your story is not the traditional story that we hear from a lot of success coaches. And so for those of you that don't know Amy Applebaum, today she is a success coach, and her company is Amy Applebaum, Inc. And she has a number of different programs that help female entrepreneurs break through barriers that are inhibiting your success and your happiness, and allow you to accomplish goals that you never imagined possible. She's been on ABC, CNN, TLC, Martha Stewart, and she's an ongoing expert for the New York Times, the International Herald Tribune, Cosmo, Woman's World. I mean, these are great publications. And she is not your typical coach, though, because Amy wasn't always a coach. Her coaching comes from real-life experience. And before she became a coach, and what we're going to be talking about today, is Amy's life when she owned what I call a real-deal serious business, not one that just existed in the virtual world, but like a bricks-and-mortar business. Not to say that those of us in the virtual world can't have real-deal serious businesses. We absolutely can. But when you've got a bricks-and-mortar business, there's no escaping it. You're there. You're doing business. And Amy had a business like that with inventory and all sorts of things that many of us online business owners don't experience. So, Amy, that's what I want to talk about today. I want to go back to that business that you had back in the day and want to hear about what it was like to have that kind of a business and really what it looked like when you realized that you weren't doing business with your eyes wide open, and how you were able to start to see what was right in front of you and the impact that it made in your life.
I would love to share all of the secret details.
Great.
I think I should kind of back up, and if it makes sense for you, I think I should kind of describe how I got into this sticker business vending.
Yeah, well, why don't you first tell me exactly what the business was, because this is not a business that probably anybody who's listening here has had. I don't know, maybe. It was a vending machine business,
yeah.
Right? Okay, tell me about
vending.
That.
I started a vending company, and my parents owned a roller skating rink.
Okay.
At the time, I was very cool in the early 80s. we owned Aloha Roller Palace, and we had actually been approached by some people who wanted to put their vending machines in our roller skating rink, from the ones that you put the 50 cents in and the stickers come out, or the 25 cent toy, all the way to the arcade games.
Yeah.
And basically they came in and they would take 50% of the profits and give you 50%, and they would handle all the upkeep, all the maintenance, as well as the stocking. Mm-hmm. So my dad thought, ooh, this is amazing.
Right.
And he ended up getting into the business.
So he got into the vending business because basically he could see that people are putting money into a machine, and it's like this great cash cow.
Absolutely.
Got
this
it.
He knew this is going to be a second business that I'm going to do. And, of course, who did he enroll to do the sales for him?
You.
It was me.
Oh. So how old were you when that happened? Were you in your 20s?
I was in my early 20s.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I had had some sales experience. You know, all of my sales experience was just based on my dad. I mean, the first job I ever had, I walked around with those honor boxes that had the cookies and treats in them. And I literally went from business to business and said, basically, listen, this takes up no space. It doesn't, you know. So, I mean, I learned right from the beginning from my very entrepreneurial father
mm-hmm.
how to just go in, ask for what you want, and learn how to sell and create benefit for other people.
So but I just want to comment on that because it's so important because I know that many of us as entrepreneurs really worry about how we're impacting our kids. I know I do. That's like a big thing. How am I impacting my kids? I work a lot. I love to work. I'm always talking about business. How is that impacting them? And it has the potential to impact your kids in not a great way, or it has the potential to impact your kids in a phenomenal way. And your dad is an example of how you can really impact your kids phenomenally with your entrepreneurial nature. My dad did the same thing. I was learning about business and sales from the time that I was a teenager. Just always, it's what he talked about, it's what he did. And so you were able, so was that really your first business, your little honor?
Well, it was my dad's business.
Uh-huh.
I was his, you know, I was his little, you know, I was his little slave going around doing what he needed me to do. But you know what I realized very early on was A, to be fearless,
mm-hmm.
and B, that rejection didn't mean anything other than what I was offering wasn't something that they wanted to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
So that is absolutely critical, right? As an entrepreneur, being able to not see that as failure or kind of see that as part of the process
yeah.
really gave me courage to continue from that point forward.
These are such important lessons. I mean, if we can teach our children how to fail and not think of it as failure.
Yeah,
if we can,
big.
You know, teach our children to ask for what they want, even if they might not get it. I mean, these are like amazing lessons to learn as a child. So how did you go from being your dad's, you know, sales slave, basically,
yes.
to being a business owner of your own?
Well, I kind of wanted to separate from that, and I moved out to Los Angeles and got a job at an Italian restaurant in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to pay the bills as I decided, like, how I was going to take my, you know, communications and interpersonal and speech communications degree, like what was I going to do with it?
Yeah.
And I don't think at that moment, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I wasn't ready for that responsibility. It was one thing to be his sales slave, but it was another to be responsible for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm at the restaurant one morning. One of my guests tells me that she's in this really big hurry. She wants the oatmeal. And, you know, she's snapping her fingers. She's doing the whole nine yards, right? And I tell her, you know, I just want to let you know that we make our oatmeal from scratch and that it's going to take about 20 minutes to cook. And she said, okay. So about 10 minutes later, she starts snapping her fingers and kind of shouting across the restaurant, where's my oatmeal? And she's so upset. So I walked over to her and I told her again that the oatmeal is made from scratch and it takes about 20 minutes. And she demanded that I bring it to her. So I did. I was so irritated. I went to the cook station and said, listen, I need the, you know, whatever, oatmeal for table 16 or whatever the table was. And they're like, it's raw. I said, that's how she wants it. So I got fired that day. And seriously, I was like in shock because she was so unreasonable.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I wasn't sad to leave because this place really was sucking the life out of me. And
yeah.
I was, you know, but I was humiliated.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just remember, for those of you who live in L.A., I was driving over Coldwater Canyon just thinking about what a loser I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the next several weeks, I was like this depressed, pathetic lump. I didn't want to get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to crawl into a hole. I panicked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was so stuck. And then after about a month, it hit me. I just had this epiphany, like, what was I upset about? I hated that place.
Yeah.
I'd been settling. Every day that I walked into that restaurant, I had been settling. And now I was just wasting time being this pathetic lump, obsessing about my problems,
mm-hmm.
feeling sorry for myself, blaming everybody else for it, and really getting nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I could have obviously spent the last month actually deciding what I wanted to do about it, but that hadn't been my choice. So
right.
What I think the big epiphany was, Alexis, was like in that moment, getting fired meant freedom.
Mm.
It wasn't.
But you didn't feel that way when it happened. And then for a month, you sat there in this pit. And I would love for you to share with people what, how, because there might be people who are listening in who are in that pit right now. And what was it that brought you out of the pit so that you could see the epiphany, so that you could see that getting fired meant freedom?
I really believe that sometimes things have to be so painful that you'll make a change.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was listening to, I mean, it was painful because the types of beliefs that I'm sure everybody on this call can relate to are like, I'm a loser. What have I done with my life? I can't believe it. And then that kind of begets even worse emotions.
Of course. Yeah.
And then do you remember that song, Freedom by, what's his name? You know, you got to have faith, that guy. What's his name?
Is it George Michael?
Yes, by George Michael. Uh-huh. So I'm like sitting there and I'm listening to the song and I started.
Freedom!
Yes. I'm kind of grooving to it. And I don't, like, there was a connection.
Uh-huh.
That word and what was happening, it connected. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm free. And it was just like that.
Wake-up call. Yeah, it was a wake-up. You woke up.
Yeah, it was. And then I remember I got out my mixtape. You know what I mean? I had like all these mixtapes, and I got out a piece of paper, and I started just brainstorming. And I had just, I knew I had been kind of in denial about what I truly wanted, which was to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to have my own business. And while I'm sitting there jiving to like Donna Summer and all these crazy tunes, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so excited. I had so many ideas. I was writing them down. And, I mean, there were a few moments of like, huh, wait a minute, but what if I, you know, what if I fail or what? But it was interesting after that Freedom song. And I think also it's not just about the Freedom song. It was all the suffering and really having this realization that my entire life could change just because I shifted how I was thinking. Suddenly, nothing happened other than I heard a Freedom song and decided that this actually meant freedom.
Right.
And then the whole world, a whole world of possibility was open to me instead of not. And what was really different, like I could have chosen to be thinking that, you know, the few moments before when I was suffering.
Yes.
But I wasn't trained to think that way at that time.
Yeah.
And it was from that moment that I realized the power of your belief in yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And in the possibilities of the future.
Oh, for sure, because it's. Because you're no longer being kind of dragged down by your nasty beliefs about how there is nothing in your future.
Yes. And so, really, I do see that moment in your life, and I'm sure you do too, as a moment of waking up, of a moment of seeing what had been right in front of you all along, because nothing changed in that moment other than your awareness.
That's it. I mean, you're nailing it.
Yeah. So, for all of us, in every moment, we can have that moment of awareness. Most of us are living our lives pretty much asleep or with our eyes closed because we feel too afraid to open them and to see what's right there in front of us. And that's where you were when you were suffering. You were afraid, right? Is that where the suffering was coming from?
Absolutely. My perception was that there was nothing. I chose to believe that. And then what is there? So in the moment that I questioned my own perception, viewpoint, truth, belief system, whatever you want to call it, you know everybody has their own version of what that is.
Right.
But in the moment that I actually decided that my existing viewpoint may not be the truth, everything opened up.
Okay. And so this is really super important for people. I didn't even know this is exactly what we'd be talking about on today's call. But because we have to, because this is really what it's all about to be an eyes wide open entrepreneur. It is to wake up and to see what's right there in front of you, which is that your beliefs, your thoughts about what is may not be true. They may not be true. And your opportunity in this moment is to ask yourself and to say, wait a minute, is that really true? Or is it just a conditioned pattern belief that I have taken on from some past experience in my life, from some past experience in my ancestors' lives? Because those are all passed down. These are genetic sometimes. It's not even anything that has happened in your own life. It has been passed down as a belief, as a story, as something that you've taken on. And so I wonder, Amy, if you're willing to explore, what was that belief? What was that false thing that you thought was true when you were suffering?
Ooh, now we're going deep. I mean, it was a variety of different things. But, you know, how could I have been so foolish as to have, A, gotten myself in this situation where now I'm, like, broke and have no income coming in?
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, how could I have denied the truth about where I want to go in my life and who I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't want to be a waitress. I mean, that wasn't my goal in life.
Yeah.
But I was willing to kind of sit in denial about the powerful or empowered woman that I wanted to be and the effect that I wanted to have on other people, because I'd always known that. I mean, you know, my job coming out of college wasn't to be serving food to people.
Right.
It was to transform lives. I just didn't know how that was going to kind of manifest itself.
And so because you didn't know how, did you push the dream away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And it so ties in with what you're talking about, because you're not just, you know, you're in the dark about maybe the how, but then you're also, and then like you just said, because you don't know how, you then start to create these interesting truths like, so it's not possible.
Yeah.
Or I'm not smart enough. Or who do I think I am trying to pull that off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then you create that your reality is you're not really that empowered woman, nor can you be.
That's right. And then you find yourself broke with no income coming in, which, of course, just confirms the belief.
Yes.
Right? And so,
dark pit.
And so we can see how we create these situations for ourselves. And the reason I want to focus so much on this is because I know that there's many of us that are sitting there in that space of, I'm broke, or I'm broken, or I'm a loser. How did I let myself get here? Because I let myself get here, I must be these things.
Yeah.
But look at Amy now. Look at Amy now.
Woo!
Woo! We could see she's not those things. She is that empowered woman. She is that empowered woman that she always once dreamed of being, but didn't know the how of. That is who she is. That's who she really is. And as soon as she woke up and saw what was right in front of her and saw that truth, that she's free. And the freedom, it wasn't financial freedom. Had your financial situation changed in that moment at all? Or were you still broke?
No. Oh, God, no. No, because I had only just, I began to make the decision that I was going to be an entrepreneur, and no, there was no money.
There was no money. She didn't have any money.
How am I going to do this? How am I going to figure it out? And, you know, if time allows, I'd love to tell you how the sticker thing happened.
Yes.
But, yeah, nothing, no money.
And so,
do not come from wealthy parents. So
right. And so what you're seeing is her circumstances had not changed at all. The only thing that had changed was her awareness, her perception, and suddenly she saw, I'm free. I am free. And you can see that too in any moment. And what happens when you do is what happened to Amy. A rush of creativity came in. Many ideas about how. She didn't know if any of them would work. She didn't have any idea if any of them would work. So maybe this is a good time to talk about how did that epiphany of freedom and that rush of ideas end up with you having a vending company?
Well, so I figured, like many people do, and if they don't, they probably will after this call, if you're in a financial crisis, sometimes the best thing to do is look at your existing fantastic skill set and figure out how you're going to use it. And what I had done was I had built up a vending route for my father. You know, he had decided he was going to have the side business of these sticker vending machines. Those are those machines you see in all the fast food restaurants. He sends in, out comes a decal.
Yeah.
I actually located most of those machines.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is my dad wanted to have a route. He's like, okay, I want to have 300 to 500 of these units in locations making money.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, I got on foot, and I did all the legwork, and I went and built his route up completely. So I thought, well, that's the most valuable tool that somebody can have when they're building a business is the sales part of it.
Mm.
Like, I already know this business, so this is what I should do.
Yes.
So I decided I'm going to launch a vending machine company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my dad had grown to the point where he was actually manufactured for other people all across the country, the machines and the product that went into them.
Yes.
So I did. I got a credit card. I mean, this is such a freaking funny story when I think back on it. I got a credit card and I bought 5 machines from my dad. And by the way, I did not get a deal on those machines.
Uh huh.
Because he felt it had to be fair with all of his distributors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean, I purchased 5 machines on my credit card.
Uh huh.
I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know how to raise money. I didn't know branding. I didn't know marketing. I didn't know administration. I didn't know taxes. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So I built this 350 machine route.
Wow.
In a year. And when I started, I had said to myself, I want to double my monthly income of $5,000 per month by landing a huge national account.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the latter part of my first year in business, the account that I got was Taco Bell.
Wow.
So,
okay, so let me just take a pause here, because people are going to be saying in their head, well, of course, her dad was in this business, and she had these various things that I didn't have, and she could get a credit card, and blah, 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 blah. So what I want you to realize is that those were things that she had that she recognized that she had, because she started paying attention. Amy started paying attention to what she did have instead of what she didn't have. And when your mind immediately goes to the comparison to say, well, Amy had that and I don't have this and I don't have that, that is exactly the conditioned, patterned behavior that is keeping you exactly where you are.
You know what, Alexis, just to kind of add to that,
yeah.
If anyone who knows me knows I'm a do-it-yourselfer, it's always been difficult for me to ask for help, and that's kind of something I'm on my own journey with, and I'm learning how to be much better at that.
Mm-hmm.
When I started, I actually discouraged my father from any mentorship whatsoever.
Mm.
So that credit card that I got was on my credit. It was from me, and I wanted no help. It actually ended up blowing up in my face later that I wasn't taking on team and mentorship.
Yes, of course.
But I think it's an important point to make to all of those people listening. I did this business myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't want help. I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it. And to be honest with you, my dad didn't have the money to support it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you can choose to compare yourself to what you see on the outside of what Amy did and say, well, I don't have this, I don't have that. Or you can look at, number one, everybody has their own struggles, their own challenges. Yours is not more difficult than anybody else's. It just feels that way because it's yours. But you also have amazing gifts. Amy's gift in this situation happened to be that she had the opportunity to see somebody build this kind of a business. Because how else would somebody know that you could do that? Although, you know what? Your gift could be that you see a sticker machine in somebody's store and you say, I wonder who does that business.
Exactly.
Because that seems like a really good business. Like
well,
her dad did, right? I mean, that's basically what your dad did. He saw, wow, this is a great business.
And, Alexis, the only thing I knew how to do was sell.
Right.
That's it. I knew how to walk. I didn't handle my dad's admin. I didn't handle stocking. Mm-hmm. I didn't handle the business.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work on commission. So for anyone thinking this wasn't tough, when I worked for my dad, he basically said, so you have two options. You're out of college, and you can either work for me on commission only or go get a job. So I'm like, oh, I mean, not knowing any better,
mm-hmm.
I'll work on commission.
Right.
And so I had to, like, go out there and pound the pavement,
right.
Make mistakes, and learn how to actually get in there and sell the benefits of the sticker machine in their location.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got good at it because I did it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And so this is really important for those of you also that have never had any sales experience. Sales experience is one of the best experiences you can have. The ability to learn how to communicate the benefit of what you or others do in writing or in speaking is absolutely critical. And if you have a bias against sales, as I did for many years, even though I have a sales background, but my dad used his sales background not for good. Not for good. He, this will be a story for another time, but let me just suffice it to say my dad did not use it for good, and as a result, I associated sales with bad because he did use it to take advantage of people, and he thought that that was okay. And so I thought that if I was going to sell, that that was how it had to be. And I went to law school so I didn't have to sell. But then once I got into business for myself, I realized you have to be able to sell because you can't help if you don't sell. Because selling is really just about identifying what somebody else needs. And then if you can satisfy that need, finding a way to do that. And if you can't satisfy that need, finding a way that they can satisfy that need, that you can help them with that. And so it's really just about helping other people get what they want. But if you have sales issues in your own self, that is something that is absolutely critical for you to see, open up your eyes to, and work with. Don't just go to a place that says, well, I'm just not going to sell. Because if you're not going to sell, you're not going to help. And you wouldn't be here if you didn't want to help. So did you ever have sales issues, Amy? Did you ever have a hard time selling?
Oh, my. I mean, just to go back to the honor boxes, I was shaking. I mean, I wasn't like I was born, you know, dynamic and charismatic and fearless and just walk into a place and go, hi, people, we've got these honor boxes. You know, I was afraid. So it's all experience-based. I became comfortable because if I could get behind whatever I was offering to people, then I just got comfortable listening to what they were looking for and presenting what I had and knowing what the benefits were.
There you go.
It just took time.
Yeah.
And being willing to completely fail. And that's where my dad was extraordinary. But, you know, it doesn't have to be your dad. It can be somebody else. But where he was extraordinary was in the encouragement of when I failed. And I feel like if we can't get that from the people around us, then we need to find some people around us who can give it to us.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Or, like, give it to yourself. Because we all know being an entrepreneur can be kind of lonely sometimes. Because no one's like, hey, Alexis, you did a great job today. You know?
Yeah.
So I'll be, like, walking around, and my assistant will see me, and I'm like, you know, I did a really great job today. And then she, of course, starts laughing. But, you know, you got to take it where you can get it.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I have to say, I got to put in my little plug for Twitter here because I get that from Twitter. That's really why I'm on Twitter, because it helps me not be lonely as an entrepreneur. Because there's so many other entrepreneurs on there, and, you know, I don't have to go anywhere to see them. They all tell me that I'm doing a great job. Yeah. So come on Twitter, Amy. I think that you're on there, but come on.
Yeah, you know what? I need to be a little bit, you know, I need a little work in that department. You'll have to coach me there.
Yeah. So your dad really helped you be able to fail and learn that failure isn't really failure. It's an opportunity to learn.
And it's part of, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, it's part of the process. And the sooner you can accept that, then the sooner you can say, oh, okay, so that failure represents me not getting what I wanted. So how can I shift what I'm doing in order to get what I want?
Yes.
And, you know, now I don't know if you want me to segue into this, but I'm starting to think, like, I should share what happened when this business started to tank, because this is where my eyes were really closed.
Yes, that's exactly what I want to talk about.
Should I just go right in?
Absolutely, yeah. Let's set the scene in terms of how long had you been operating your business when you started to notice that having your eyes closed wasn't working for you anymore?
That's a really good question. I think 3 years.
All right. So this is interesting because that's about the time frame for me as well when I could not continue to do business with my eyes closed. Or I could, but it got really dangerous to do that.
Yeah.
Because 3 years in, like, the money's flowing, right? And you're counting on it. And in my case, I started to take on team. And once you take on team, you have a big responsibility. But it sounds like maybe that wasn't the case for you. So you needed to be taking on team. But,
I needed to be taking. Well, what happened was, you know, I was doing really well. I had somewhere in the vicinity of like 400 to 500 of these machines out there, and I had dominated the fast food market. Like, you name the franchisee, and I had all of their stores. So I would be like, a Taco Bell franchisee would own 60 stores, and my units would be in every one of their stores. And then I started actually operating for other vending route operators across the country and getting them those locations and taking a commission. So it was like gold.
So great, yeah.
And what I did, the mistake that I made was I put all of my eggs in one basket.
Mm.
So what started to happen was Taco Bell Corporate, really pretty much let franchisees make their own decisions about the stores.
Yeah.
And then they started to pull in the reins and started to basically communicate to the franchisees that they didn't want these units in their locations. And some of them didn't care. Mm-hmm. What corporate said, because they were really powerful and they had 60 locations and they had a lot more power in the corporate market.
Yeah.
But a big portion of the people who didn't have that many, because many of the operators only had 5 or 10 stores or 2,
yeah. mm-hmm.
started to drop off.
Mm.
So in a very, 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 very short amount of time, we lost over 3/4 of our business.
Wow.
It was like they put out a memo, scared everybody, and, you know, we didn't have tight, tight binding contracts only because franchisees wouldn't work with that.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really need it. They were happy. Mm-hmm. We had our units in the store. They were making money for doing nothing. And what was happening was they weren't reporting it to corporate. So that put – so I think corporate was just really mad. And that's why they put the memo out, because they wanted a piece of it. But there was no negotiating with them. So we literally, Alexis, lost like 3/4 of our business within 3 months.
Wow. So was there a point at which you, looking back now, feel like you could have had your eyes open, that you could have been more aware of this issue of having basically one client, right? It's,
yeah.
it's really the same effect as having one client.
If I wouldn't have been so stubborn, Alexis, in the beginning to do things on my own and not incorporate a team and not actually ask my dad for help, he would have told me.
Mm.
But, you know, I just went in and I built his business up all around, you know, a lot of these fast food market.
Yeah.
And then when I started my own business, he hired somebody else to do that because I no longer wanted to do it for him outside
yeah.
of that market.
Mm-hmm.
So he had this very diverse route. But
yeah.
I'm like, no, I can do this. I have it. I don't need
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I was working with a client recently, and this client was having an event. And I said, you know, do you want to go over the offer? Oh, no, I got that part. I got it. And whenever I hear that, I immediately think that's going to be the place that they fail. But when somebody's in that mindset of, I already know that, I'm good. And it's like this feeling that they're putting out their hands, two hands up and pushing you away. You can't coach someone in that space. And so it's important for you to always pay attention to when you are in that mindset of, I already know that, I got it. I mean, that's like it right there, Amy, that I got it, I'm good.
Yeah.
That's the place. Yeah, that's the place that you can feel that in your own body when that comes up and recognize it. And in that moment, you could call bullshit on yourself.
Yeah.
And that is going to open your eyes, because it's going to question what you believe to be true that isn't necessarily really true at a deep down level. Because look at Amy. She didn't really have it. I mean, she had it. She had it going on big time.
I had it going on. But then I didn't. And, you
but
know, it makes me think of some of the, you know, some of what you teach. It just kind of brought me back to when I located my first machine. I didn't have insurance. And the reason I didn't have business insurance was because I just didn't know.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have that, I didn't have any mentorship around me, or I wouldn't allow anybody to mentor me.
Right.
And my very first machine, I was in business with somebody else. They did not tighten the machine down onto the stand. And the machine fell on a child.
Oh, my God.
It's a 120-pound machine. Mm-hmm. It fell on a 3-year-old.
Oh, my God.
And I am, like, the luckiest person on the planet because
yeah.
they did not sue, and the child was okay. But I'm like, oh, my
you
God.
You are the luckiest person on the planet that they did not sue.
Oh, my. I mean, that's where karma comes in, Alexis. I'm
yeah.
Like, but I remember that I called my dad. I was in tears. He's like, well honey, business insurance.
Wow.
And, you know, he also calmed me down by explaining, you have no business. You own no house. You own nothing. And there's nothing to get.
Mm.
So he also calmed me down. There's so many reasons to have a mentor in your life. Mm. I can't even, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so what did you do? You went from, you know, having a phenomenal business to losing 3/4 of your business. What did you do? What did you do?
Well, I mean, I had to get busy. So
yeah.
I mean, ultimately what I did was I eventually sold the company, but I did build my business back up.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a lot of time, and to be honest with you, I single-handedly had done a lot of saturating of the market, especially in my local area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was definitely more difficult.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I'm just thinking of those sticker machines. I hate those sticker machines as a mom. My kids, of course, love them. And we have this ice cream shop in near my old house in Hermosa Beach. Maybe you put some sticker machines there. Now they're tattoo machines. And the kids, they want to go there just because of the darn tattoo machine.
Yeah.
And so it really is really good for the store owner to have those there, because the kids definitely remember that they're there and want to go back. So it's totally funny. So you realized ultimately through all of this that you got to have a coach, and you became a coach.
I did. I became a coach. But, you know, I originally studied therapy, and then my job coming out of college was to go into large corporations and figure out where the communication breakdown was from the top-level CEO down to the lowest-level subordinate.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated it because I would find out after much investigation and kind of my own natural kind of coachy ways, I would find out they shouldn't be there.
Mm.
And I so wanted to say, fly, go and be, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when I kind of gave that up and said, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So what was nice was once I sold the vending company, I was able to revisit my roots and my true passions.
Mm-hmm.
So
and you became that empowered woman that you saw back in the day, you know, that you, like, I would imagine before you even ever went to college, right? This is what you wanted to be, was this empowered woman.
Yeah.
And
what I really wanted to, what I've been from my whole life is a problem solver. So I have always gravitated towards inspiring others and helping them achieve what they want. So there was just kind of a natural,
mm-hmm.
it was a natural fit. But, you know, you and I both know, there was no one really knew about coaching 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's not what they called it. There was Tony Robbins and NLP. And
right.
That wasn't really the model. So
yeah.
I actually, when I started my company, it was pretty early
mm-hmm.
For that. But that, you know.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I first started coaching with someone about 10 years ago, and I was so resistant to it because you're right. Back then, like, coaching was kind of, I don't know, seen as fringe. And I was, you know, a lawyer in a big law firm, and I already felt like I was fringe and a big loser.
Right.
Because I wasn't fitting in, and I hated it, and, you know, I was supposed to love it, and I had a family, and I was making all this money, and I was miserable. And I started coaching with this woman, and it radically, completely, totally, I'd still be there in that law firm if it hadn't been for that. But it was a big hurdle for me to get over to even start coaching. And then when I got the inkling that I wanted to be a coach, oh, it was terrible because I was a lawyer. And
right. How are you going to do that?
Well, not only how, but I spent a lot of time beating myself up for even wanting to. Like, you know, I'd invested over $60,000 in my law school education and taken on debt, and I had to do something that involved being a lawyer, which, you know, I guess I am able to look back now and see how it all fit together. But at the time, there was a lot of resistance to that. And it was great because it inspired me to do my own work so that I could move through that resistance. And, of course, how can you help others if you haven't done your own work? It always gets me, by the way, when there's coaches who don't have coaches. I've always, always, always had a coach since back then, sometimes more than one because I get different things from different people. But it's that always kind of floors me a little bit because, how can you be coaching if you are not constantly working on yourself and up-leveling and evolving your own self? Because ultimately what coaching is to me is it's being able to take your eyes out of your head. It's the closest to being able to take your eyes out of your head and see yourself.
Mm, that is so right on, Alexis.
Mm.
You know, when I think about, I love this topic. I love this topic that you're doing. I think it's so valuable because, you know, when I really think about what I was in the dark about, you know, it wasn't just diversification in my own business. What I realized was I like to call myself a recovering expert. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I feel like I have this kind of expert disease.
Yeah.
And everything in the past has been about my expertise instead of what my audience needs. And there have been several symptoms that I used to be in the dark about that would kind of show up for me. And the symptoms were like, you know, perfectionism and inflexibility and self-centeredness. And this kind of all then led to not being able to achieve certain goals. And I think that when I started to open my eyes about those traits and how they weren't serving me, you know, everything changed.
Right, right. And I would ask you, how did you open your eyes? How did you begin to start seeing these things that have been with you all your life, right? I mean, perfectionism is not something that all of a sudden came about. Inflexibility, not something that all of a sudden came about. These are parts of, these are things that somebody might even say, well, this is just who I am.
Yes, they would.
Right?
Yes, and somebody who is not self-aware or evolving. And I think when you hit, when you keep hitting a roadblock, you have two choices. Blame your external circumstances and leave it at that, or start to look at who you're being that's creating that. So I decided to be that person because the other way wasn't getting me anywhere. Like kind of blaming everybody else was just, it wasn't getting me out of being stuck.
Yeah.
you know, so I began, like you said, you start to evolve. You start reading the books. You start going, oh, my, there's a world out there of who I am, and I've been in total and complete denial. And I think that when you have a little taste of that and you practice it a little and then you see a result, it makes you realize, oh.
Yeah.
Like self-awareness is the key.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of fear around being self-aware. I think it can be scary because people people feel like self-awareness, it means I'm not good enough or I'm bad or I'm, you know, and I decided a long time ago I didn't want to think like that anymore after the whole failure in the restaurant and the, I decided, you know, failure meant Amy, pay attention.
Yes.
That was kind of my new definition.
That's right. You know, and I think that that's, that for most of us, the reason that we might be afraid of or not interested in self-awareness, and I don't even know if it's a fear of self-awareness because I don't even know if most people know what it is, but more not interested in it is because the only awareness we have had is of the negative self-talk that is almost always running in the background. Amy, you heard Amy talk about having it. You heard me talk about having it. And I am happy to say that it's not eradicated by any means, but I have learned to know what it is, to know what it is and to know how to work with it in my life. And it is almost entirely gone. And as I said, it's not completely eradicated. Of course, there's still times that the negative self-talk comes up. That happens for everybody. But now with awareness, I can see it for what it is and I'm able to bust myself. And one of the things that has really helped me is that when the negative self-talk comes up, I don't try and turn it off. I ask what's going on. What are you trying to tell me, voice in my head? And, you know, I wrote some things down recently on my board because it was coming up for me big time. And I wrote down on my board, I am whiny. I am a complainer. I'm a perfectionist.
Awesome.
I'm a control freak. Okay, so I wrote these things down because this is what was coming up. And I complain a lot, right? And then I said, okay, thank you, because those messages are trying to tell you something, and you just need to shift the energy of dealing with them. Stop trying to resist them. They're like a little child. And I guess I get this because I know that when my kids want my attention, they move from positive behavior to negative behavior, and it's like they start to, like, hit me and stuff. And that's what this voice is doing. It's been trying to talk to you for quite a long time, and you've been ignoring it, and so it gets really negative and complainer. And so I said, I need to schedule in self-care. And then I asked myself, what is that? And, you know, I had gotten so busy with my work that I had forgotten what I enjoy to do other than work. I love business. I love it. But when I do it to the exclusion of taking care of my body and myself and my soul, my voice gets really angry. And when I recognized that, I could see, hello, it's trying to tell me something. And it's the same for you. If you can notice it, it's trying to tell you something. And if you could listen to it with a love of and not a judgment, and don't take it personally, whatever that voice is saying to you. And I know that some of these things that I might be saying right now, you're not taking all of it in, possibly, and you can listen to this call again and again, because the things that Amy and I shared with you today of ways that you can begin to shift this are really transformational for you when you begin to let them in. So, Amy, when you began to see the perfectionism and the inflexibility and the self-centeredness and how these things were causing an inability to achieve your desired goals, what changed?
Well, I mean, I had to accept that my role, that my model wasn't working.
Mm.
And that was why.
Yeah.
Who am I being? How am I thinking that's creating this, and what needs to shift? And I think I had to remember that in my business, you know, it's like a marriage, and we're in a relationship together,
mm-hmm.
and, like, I'm ignoring it.
Mm.
Yet it was providing me money,
yes,
and freedom, mm-hmm. and I'm still ignoring certain things.
Mm.
Just like in a relationship, you know, you either break up, fall apart, get divorced. I mean, you know,
right?
And I think I really had to start to have more respect for the business as its own entity,
mm.
as something mm-hmm. that I needed to kind of love and nurture and nourish. And, you know, maybe that sounds kind of out there, but.
No. I mean, this is really what Lyft is all about, right? I mean, what does it look like to take care of this baby, this partner that I have, this spouse? Yeah. How do you do that? Well, in the business, it's with business model. It's with legal, insurance, financial, tax stuff. It's with team, right?
It's absolutely protecting it, keeping your eyes open, as you like to put it, and
yeah.
knowing what's going on. And, you know, I mean, I know that I can't prepare for everything because there's all that stuff that I don't know.
Right.
That I don't even know to think about.
Right.
You know, and I know that now. So I don't sit in defense mode.
Right.
I set myself up to do the best job that I can, and I tank sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, okay, well, I'm not going to do that again.
Right.
But in having the right types of people around me, I'm able to avoid a lot of the stuff that could be really detrimental.
Well, and I think that also what you do is you're able to move through it, so that, you know, the way I say it is that stuff's going to happen, you know. I have a story of a big roll of carpet that was in the middle of the road when I was driving one day, and don't have time for now, but I'll have to tell it at some point. So like I say, you know, or there's going to be a huge roll of carpet in the road. And the only choice that you have is how to deal with that. Is that stuff that happens going to turn into a little speed bump or a massive pothole that your car gets stuck in?
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down to the day-to-day, moment-by-moment choices that you make and how much your eyes are open and how much you're willing to live in the, I don't know, I need help. You know, I don't have all the answers. And that seems to be the big awareness for you, Amy. Let me ask you, for people that want to be in touch with you, want to hear more about your coaching, where can they go?
They can go to amyapplebaum.com, which is AmyApplebaum.
Great.
And they can find out all about me.
Okay, great. AmyApplebaum.com. I encourage you to check out Amy, obviously a woman with a tremendous amount of business wisdom who knows what it looks like to do business with your eyes wide open. And, Amy, I want to thank you so much for being here. It was just phenomenal to get to know you and hear about your experiences, and I appreciate you going deep with me and helping us all open our own eyes to things that we may not have been seeing up until now. To the rest of you, thank you for being here as well, and until next time, this is Alexis Neely. Be sure to keep your eyes wide open.